Hey guys, welcome back. BDC Gear here. We're back with our weekly recap of all things Injustice. This is the Q&A, actually. It's not that even a little bit. I was in a mode. Did you even notice it?
Not really.
No. Sorry, this is our weekly Q&A. This season 10, episode 15. We have two modes, and clearly I was in the wrong one. I didn't realize it was Tuesday today. You said, are we recording? And I said, oh, yeah, we are, but for the first second, I was just kind of like,
what?
Flashbang. I was like, what do you mean?
So I woke up, I woke up Saturday. So just a couple days ago, I woke up Saturday in a panic because the alarm hadn't gone off. I think, oh, my alarm didn't go off. I got to get up. I'm 5 minutes past when the alarm should have gone off. I got to get ready for work.
Yeah.
Didn't have to go to work. I had already gotten up to feed the cat, made my breakfast before I realized, oh, not today.
I made it up.
It's a fake. I made it up. So it's, yeah, it's been, I can totally see how those days can happen.
Yeah.
So Q&A. All right. So before we get into that, I want to have a quick word about the footage. So last week during our weekly recap, we talked about Kandak Black Adam, whose week this is and how fast he is. And it's sort of a joke because, you know, all the Black Adams have fast basics, but it's that there is something about the way his specials work that is weird. So if I'm getting the footage right, if you're watching the right footage, there's going to be a few fights, if you pay attention, where after he's done his special two and he immediately tags out for Red Lantern Hal Jordan, they're both on the screen at the same time. For a moment, they're both there.
Yeah.
So he is, the trigger for letting Hal Jordan in is faster than the animation for Black Adam to leave after having done a special two. Which we sort of knew was a little funky from how fast you can do his next special.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
So that's what we'll be looking at. And then we often talk a little bit about what we've been playing or watching or doing.
Yes.
And so we finished Andor.
Yes.
You for your second time, me for my first time. Exceptional show.
I honestly think that it was better the second time for me.
Yeah.
And I think... All right, so spoiler alert for Speaker for the Dead by Orson Scott Card in the next couple minutes if you want to just skip over this. But it is like reading Speaker for the Dead. And in my mind, there was a plot point that he hadn't revealed yet.
Yeah.
That I thought, this is what's going to happen. This is what's happening. Mm-hmm. And that tension from the plotting made me not appreciate some of the other moments as well. So the second time reading it was actually better. And that's the way it was for Andor.
Because you just get to experience each moment as it is and you don't need to worry about what happens next. There's not the same sort of tension of like...
suspense. There's no...
narrative.
Narrative suspense. Plot suspense. Yeah. And I could... There was a couple moments where I really teared up a bit.
Yeah.
And I don't remember having that impression the first time. And again, I don't want to spoil it, but it was just so much more powerful in moving certain parts of it the second time around than it was the first. Mm-hmm. Didn't have to worry about what the plots were. Because, the thing is, I consume media in a way where I don't necessarily remember all the details of the plot. So sometimes I can watch something and it's like the first time all over again. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have to worry about it because I knew, all right, I'd already seen that. I know I don't have to really worry too much about something really...
You just kind of let it wash over you.
Right, because some of the big plot points, right? Like, they stick with you. But the minor stuff
that
seem maybe really important at the time aren't so much. And I can appreciate each character's moment. It was like Marva. Oh my gosh. Like, there was just... Yeah, it was...
Cool stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and what's neat about it is... So, I started rewatching Rogue One. Unfortunately, I did it when I was tired and falling asleep.
Yeah.
And
that's the problem with your free time, when you just sit down and you have no jobs or responsibilities and you're tired.
Yeah.
You want to have fun, but instead your body says, no, I think you need more sleep right now.
Yeah, it does. And I think there's the parts that I, you know, saw the second time around before I fall asleep is that I feel like the TV shows, when it's done right, has better potential. Because the amount of time that you have in that world, because it's so much longer, lets you have those kind of plot arcs, the story arcs, that need a little bit of time to really get a feel for it.
Yeah.
And very rarely do you see that in movies. There's one point in, I might have mentioned this before. I think in Almost Famous, the movie, mm-hmm. where they do that. But it's one of those things where you're almost conscious of how uncomfortable it is. So Lester Bangs is walking down the street with William after they've had the talk at the radio station.
Yeah.
And they've said goodbye to each other. But then they're both walking in the same direction. And then they're at the street light. They have to stop at the light. And the mm-hmm. light's turned red for the direction they want. So they're just standing there awkwardly.
Yeah.
And normally in a movie, that's where you'd cut away to the next scene or whatever.
Yeah.
But it rides that moment in a really funny way where you get that awkwardness without having to have a bunch of acting, whatever, because it's just real. Like, you know that yeah. happens, like when that happens in real life.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I feel like that Andor, you know, a lot of the same stories. And before watching Andor, I felt that Rogue One to me was one of the best Star Wars movies in a way that was better. Like that I'm almost tired in some ways of how Star Wars is sort of, the days of Skywalker lives, you know, yeah. or Skywalker Street or something like that.
Keeping
you know,
up with the Skywalkers.
Yeah. So this is, you know, and there's room clearly for sci-fi fantasy where the people who are doing stuff are really important.
Yeah.
But there's also room for stories where people are caught up in important things.
Yeah.
And you can see how real people react. And to me, that's where the real strength of Andor is that mm-hmm. the people feel real.
Mm-hmm. And it does something really good with sci-fi. This is going to be mild spoilers for Andor, but there's a lot of side plots and side stories in Andor. So the mm-hmm. good news is that there's a lot of threads following, so this won't necessarily spoil anything big, but skip forward about a minute if you don't want to know one of the places that sort of the cameras go at one point in right. Andor, because there's a sort of side thing in a prison, right? There's mm-hmm. time spent on the show in a prison, and the way that they sort of set up their sci-fi prison, and they have it clearly very different from anything that exists in the world, I think, mm-hmm. or I would hope anyways, mm-hmm. But they set it up very cleanly. It's a little sort of sci-fi fiction, but it's got a really sort of clear, easy to understand and digest set of rules. It makes intuitive sense. And then the sort of fiction element of it is intrinsically tied into the story that happens there in yeah. a really deep way.
Yeah.
And I think that I find, like, obviously not every sort of magic system or fantasy world or sci-fi thing needs to be like that. But I happen to really like it when it's kind of crunchy like that, where right. it's set up and everything's intertwined. Like the plot is intertwined with the like system for how the world works, and for all the ways that it's right. different from reality, right. it's thoughtful and important, where right. it's not just, this is a world where there are wizards, but you know, the magic powers are essentially yeah. just cell phones and guns right. and things right. that you already have. Right. Cause right. then it's like, well, why is this a fantasy setting? It doesn't need to be right.
right.
But so, with that in Andor, and I'm going to stop talking about it in case people jump forward and they it's a spoiler again, but the way that they set that up and then continue to pay it off. They yeah. use the sci-fi elements of the show really effectively as an intrinsic part of sort of the plot and the feel mm-hmm. and everything. And mm-hmm. they had a little bit of that Star Wars of like, you know, sometimes there's just like an alien around, right? And
right.
the fact that they're an alien doesn't matter. But in the same way that you would, you know, have like racial diversity in a show where it doesn't need to matter that, you know, this person is this ethnicity, because in a lot of stories, it just doesn't. For white people, it doesn't yeah, matter.
Right, but you should be allowed to exist in stories without having to be a plot point.
Yeah.
I think that's important to understand.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. that was, I think, really cool. Is it employed its sort of sci-fi but in a really yeah. like measured way.
But there's certain ways that science fiction can be bad, and it really emphatically doesn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's certain, you know, when you stick in something that's clearly supposed to be an analog for something else, and you could have just made it that something else,
yeah.
but they have to make it fancy, give it a new name, whatever. And what I like is that they have language in it that is built into the situation, going back to the prison, where it feels real, but it doesn't feel like it's something that's stolen from real world stuff, but also doesn't feel like it's artificial. It feels like mm-hmm. lived in. Like, so the phrase, one way out, or the phrase, on program.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it feels real without yeah. being, like,
What it is forced. You know, it's clearly not a literal truth,
right.
but they manage to express effectively an emotional truth. Yeah. Which is great. Yeah. And you know it's not a literal truth because you're watching a Star Wars thing, right? This is not a documentary. But they, when they're still able to sort of evoke emotions, and I find that, like, you know, a piece of media has to be pretty good for it to genuinely evoke emotions within me.
Right.
It's good.
Yeah. If anybody hasn't seen Andor, see it. Yeah. Absolutely worth it. Best Star Wars I've ever seen.
And then I'm not going to spend too much time because I've mentioned it briefly before, but I finished Disco Elysium, and that game is exceptional. If you like stories, like, it is very, like, word heavy, but if you like sort of RPG systems and stories or storytelling at all, it is worth playing. Like, it's easy to get into. It's just sort of mouse and keyboard, and it's like that third person perspective. So there's no sort of like particular mechanical skill you need to navigate it. It should be pretty accessible to most, like, people who play any sort of video games, which is great. And it is exceptionally well done. Okay. Like, it's really just interesting and cool, and, like, it has a lot to say, I think.
Right.
And it is so, like, it's just dripping in sort of a certain point of view and aesthetic and positionality and everything. Like, it is, for the fact that most games are take such sort of, like, lukewarm sort of stances on the world, for a game to be so about something and about things is really refreshing. Like, it's interesting because it would be really easy for it to not work. I'll just say one of the things is that you get different dialogue options at various points in the game. And depending on how you respond, the game will tell you if you're speaking more like a fascist, a communist, sort of like a moralist, like, liberal who doesn't take any stances on anything. Like, there's, and so for, like, it's funny how in your face the politics, and it's really cool and interesting the way they show how, like, life and your situation inherently shapes politics, and the way that, like, your people's material conditions of existence are political, and that you can't, like, separate those two things.
Right.
And so, like, almost every person that you talk to in the world, you can kind of understand where they're situated materially and how that influences sort of their politics, but also their interactions with, like, the politics of other people and the larger sort of, like, systems in the world. And I'm like, that's exceptionally cool. Right. Like, the fact that you're learning about most things through clearly and explicitly biased narrators, and it makes you engage with how their view of the world shapes the information that they give you is really, really cool.
Neat.
Yeah. Okay. It's like, it's a detective story where somebody admits to the crime in, like, act one of, like, the three act, like, narrative. Like, it's cool.
See, I'm very tempted, but who knows? I might actually play that. Who knew that I would get stuck playing AliExpress Merge boss?
Yeah.
Because,
oh my god.
And I'm still playing it.
Yeah, so those are two pieces of media that we can really heartily recommend. Okay. And with Disco Elysium, wait for it to go on sale because it's $40 new or at full price, and it goes down to, like, $10 on sale.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And also, I guess maybe there is a bunch of drama with the studio, so maybe look into that and see how you feel about it. Some people, I'm obviously not saying don't, like, buy it because of it necessarily, but, like, you know, just be aware that there's a conversation about things and, like, ownership and copyright and whatever, if you care.
Yep.
Anyways, getting into the first question, it comes from Blintz Bug, BLYNTZ Bug with two G's, 1795, and they say, maybe you're not comfortable sharing this, but I may as well ask because I'm curious. How much do you guys make from doing this podcast? I know you obviously don't do it for the reason of making money. I'm just curious. We're very willing to talk about this stuff. Yeah. We don't care at all. I think if we're making more money, it might make sense to guard our finances, but because it's so, you know,
trivial.
Yeah. It's like saying, like, oh, I noticed you picking up some change off of the ground. How much was that? And it's like, I can't tell you. It's a secret. You know, if you inherit, like, $50,000 from a relative, maybe you want to keep that.
Sure. We've got a lot of money and it potentially makes you a target.
Yeah.
Then it's probably worth hiding. I mean, when we're talking, so here's the difficult part of answering that is because, so we're talking about the podcast.
Yeah.
The podcast itself, the audio portion of it, we make pretty much no money directly.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the number of people listening to it is maybe a dozen.
So you're saying the stuff that we upload, right. as a podcast, right, like right. an RSS feed and everything. So we make zero. Right. We make no money from that.
If you're watching this as a video, each one of these Q&A videos is separate from the weekly recaps, right? So we're not talking channel. So I'm just disambiguating. I know the question seems pretty clear. I'm just disambiguating to make sure there's no misunderstanding. Yeah. Weekly recap does not bad. And when I say not bad, it's still trivial.
Yeah.
But this Q&A... gives us maybe about a buck per episode.
Yeah, I think it can go as high as a couple bucks, and it can go as low as like 25 cents or something like that.
And when I say relative, right, because half the videos are basically Q&A, half of them are weekly recaps.
Yeah.
We're making probably about, at this point, 25 bucks a month.
Yeah.
On the entire channel, on...
our whole catalog of
right, videos. So everything, so every video that anybody's watching, it's going to be worth that much a month.
Yeah.
I guess I mean you could roll the Patreon stuff into this. Yeah. That people, I mean, I feel like the people who appreciate a Patreon
is probably for this.
It's probably for this and less for the weekly recap. I'm not really sure, because the other thing that we've done with the weekly recap now is that some of our previous content that was multiplayer fighting.
Yeah.
Has been rolled into the weekly
recap. And we're kind of talking about the characters and stuff.
Right. So we're doing those kind of,
yeah,
that kind of content in that video that used to be really just, hey, this is what's happening.
And so that's $6 a month minus whatever Patreon's fees are. So that's maybe like $5 or five something a month or whatever.
Right.
So you can call that, you know, like a buck and a bit per week.
Right.
And depending on whether you count that for both of our videos, in which case that's like 75 cents maybe per video, or if you count that as just for the Q&A, then that's like a buck something per Q&A.
And most of that, most of the viewership comes in the first 5 days, six days at the most. And it's there's a quick drop off after that. So if you look at it, almost anything else, very few videos have legs. The Q&As definitely do not.
Yeah.
With a few exceptions where... if there was that one Q&A season 6 episode 9 where we talk really about that the glitch where you use two devices simultaneously logged into one account that we say is bad because you can get your account suspended.
Yeah.
That one's got a bit more, but only because I think it's got that one piece of content and we mention that when we do our recap each week. So it probably drives a few more viewers. I think it's worth it though. Like, it's not like I think that there's any kind of other value in pushing other... Q&A, you like it or you don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not. I wouldn't say it's timeless the way say good science fiction or fantasy is timeless, but I think a lot of it is we do go into a lot of talking about general stuff, but also a lot of injustice. But because there's just so many hours that we've done, it'd be hard to index that content.
Yeah.
So you basically work your way through it, or it's dead to you, I think.
Yeah. So the amount of money we make from this, the sort of short answer is very little, like a dollar to a couple of bucks like sort of being the most generous to how much this is generating us.
Yeah.
It is much less than we could make if we spent the same time every week doing some sort of like work from home, like flexible schedule.
Oh,
like remote stuff, but we do this because we like it. So
it's
like not enough to sort of justify our time expenditure if this was something that we were fully neutral on.
Right.
But we actually happen to enjoy this.
Yeah. Nobody's paying me to watch TV. I still do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a conversation with a friend recently. It was in sort of discussion of Taylor Swift and her new album.
Mm-hmm.
And what the friend was saying is that, he was a Taylor Swift fan. He didn't particularly like the new stuff. And he said, it feels like a waste of time because I think that it just feels worse. And it seems like the consensus with a lot of people is that it's like the same, or some of the songs they like less, maybe, you know, a song or two they like a little bit more. But to have as much money as you have and to spend your sort of limited time basically doing the same thing again, but worse, feels like such a waste. And my response was, maybe, but also I know that like it's the whole thing with like the reason why she's doing the Taylor's version is because of getting rights back, right? Essentially, to that catalog.
Yep.
And I was like, in my perspective, spite is a great reason to do something when you're that rich, because there's very few things that you could do that have any particular meaning in one way or another.
Right.
So kind of just doing whatever you want. I'm like, I already, you know, have things that I want and need that I don't currently have that I could be working towards at any given moment. And I already spend a lot of my time doing stuff that is not providing value to anyone particularly. Never mind outside of me, every once in a while. You know, sometimes you spend time, you know, with that merge game that you're playing where afterwards, I don't know if you can really say that you're happier or that you feel great about the time you spent doing it. It's kind of just a thing that you're doing. And, you know, sometimes you go on, like, social media or whatever, and you come out of that feeling worse. You can spend an hour doing something.
Doom scrolling.
And then feel even worse than you did when you started. And so I was like, if you were that rich, I imagine that I'd actually probably spend a lot of my time absolutely wasting it. And especially when, like, all of my, like, drives have been sort of solved for me, it would potentially be even harder for me to find something that I think I would find really, like, meaningful. And whatever. So I was like, so spite actually feels like as good a reason as anything else. I think if I was rich, I would, that would be a great thing to hold on to, as long as it's not like a sort of, you're not like hurting other people, right? If you're doing some sort of, I'm not going to call it good natured spite, but I guess like victimless spite.
Yeah. The kind that doesn't make the world a worse kind of place, right? I mean, really, this is sort of what's been driving us for some of the injustice stuff and decisions we made about glitches and cheating. No, just that it would
not be... not making the world a worse place, yeah.
Right, that if as best as we could judge.
Yeah. So I think sort of non-malicious spite is great, actually. I'm a big fan of non-malicious spite. I think it motivates people to do a lot of great stuff. Anyways, that's the official podcast stance. Yeah, so our next questions, this is like a group of them. So I'm going to read maybe one or two, and then I'm just going to read out user names of people who've asked just to give them.
I don't know, they're pretty short.
Okay. So David Gustafson, 6164, says, a tier list would be very interesting to see, given your expertise and knowledge on the game. Love watching the video. Please keep it up. OS Karns, 2483, says, can you guys make a tier list of all the challenge characters you have reviewed, but not specifically as special specialists, but also what they shine as, tanks, supports, etc. Also, I vote you make the last reviews now. Noah Guzman, 725, says, can you make a character tier list? You guys have a lot of insight and know the game way better than most. And then Lucas Max Hansen, 8096, says a tier list would be very interesting to see given your expertise and knowledge on the game. Love watching the video. Please keep it up.
And so these are all one of the same, but I feel like there's another one that I'm going to bring up is Paralyzer, but in elite speak. So the A's are fours, the E is a three.
Yeah.
And Paralyzer says, it just dawned on me that since Regime Killer Frost challenge was never repeated, you guys should do a reanalysis of gameplay for her and other characters that aren't regularly available. So it's an interesting question. I feel like we've touched on it a bunch of other times before. And I'm not completely averse to the idea of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the prospect of, I know we talked about this a little while ago, like some people do, you were saying that they do a live...
Yeah.
Tier list.
So there's kind of two ways for us to do it. One way would be for us to go away and write all of our thoughts and figure it all out and then have sort of like almost like a presentation, right?
Yeah.
Of our arguments for each thing. And then the other way is to just screen record, use that sort of tier list maker for Injustice Mobile. Yep. I think there's one that already exists because I think I've seen people do that. Mm-hmm. And then literally just sit down and record us talking about it and sort of have us move stuff into it where there's no prep in advance or whatever. We're just going in and giving our opinions. And first off, I think that the first one is just too much work for us to do it.
Right.
So the only way we'd be able to do it is that way. And I guess
the second way.
Yeah, the second way. Yeah. So I guess this is a good opportunity. If that's something that you would like to see, you can leave a comment and let us know, right? The more comments we get... it's not gonna definitely mean we do it, but it makes it more likely, right? We get to sort of see directly if what we've just described, that exact format, is something that you would be interested in and would watch.
Right. I think, but I do want to talk a little bit about this, and it should be obvious, maybe it's not, it should be obvious to a lot of people who watch this channel, watch the teams we put together, that the way people make tier lists, I feel, is generally wrong. That most tier lists are just wrong.
They're like too individualistic almost.
Right. So I know I've said this before, and but I'm willing to say again, and we've got so many hours of footage that I'm sure that this is going to be news to some people.
Yeah.
Is that the way people make tier lists is they consider characters in isolation and what they can do on their own, what they contribute on to teams in general.
Yeah, but no man is an island.
No man
is an island. We all rely on each other.
Right. And I think you could do it a bunch of different ways, right? You could do it, say, no gear. You could say low levels, you whatever. But the problem is that's not how you use them. Use them as best as you can.
Yeah.
With the optimal team and the optimal gear mm-hmm. and the placement on the team. So the funny thing is, I think, is that we play them a certain way. You almost never play one character, right? I think sometimes you might play two at the lowest when somebody can't, like somebody's disabled, like some person's disabled. But you're very rarely, if ever, until you've really lost most of the fight. It's not a one-on-one, right? Mm-hmm. So there are...
And passives and everything, like team dynamics. So, like a lot of the good characters specifically need teammates to have their abilities function as intended.
Right. And so the way people make tier lists of individuals, I think, is just broken a little bit. And I want to compare it to how we talk about gears each week when we do our weekly recap. And if there's a legendary gear in the multiplayer... Mm-hmm. And that if we don't talk about it, the range of what it is, we talk about what it is maxed out.
Yeah.
And this is the same way. So maybe they're not perfect for everything, but when they're maxed out and in the ideal situation, how good are they?
Yeah.
So you can look at our teams. I think underrated in general are powerful team passives. So Hawkgirl is almost on every mm-hmm. team. The fact that Tantua Totem exists means that Hawkgirl is amazing.
Yeah.
A character that can decrease the time it takes to wait before swapping in and out makes Tantua Totem that much more powerful. And her passive is faster in a way that actually has an impact on a fight. If it was 2 seconds slower even, like it made less time difference, it wouldn't be as good. The fact that she can change the tag in time so that when you... tag somebody in, do a special two, you can almost tag out immediately mm-hmm. depending on how long their special two is.
Yeah.
And game changing.
That's where like sort of tier lists fall short is because if you're just talking about how good is this character in their sort of best setup, mm-hmm. That is one way that maybe feels fair, but then the people that end up falling through the cracks are people who are important parts of that setup. Yeah. Right? Yeah. You know, if somebody's really good at setting up other people for success, does that mean that they're super high tier? Because then they're going to be put in, but you know, you can say yes or no, but it's all philosophy, right? Because if you say yes, that's your opinion.
Yes.
You end up with them in tiers of people who can mostly beat the crap out of them in an actual fight. Yeah. Right? Yeah. So they're useful as like a utility. And then, you know, it's really complicated. Oh, are they useful by themselves? Are they useful in specific teams? Are they useful with almost any team? Are they useful in making other people better?
So Hawkgirl Prime, actually, this is an interesting point too. Hawkgirl Prime is one of the Lost Challenge characters, as Paralyzer was asking about.
Yeah.
And we've used her in almost every one of our teams. And the one way I haven't used her is I haven't used her as a specialist, which would mm-hmm. be really interesting because... it would open up a third slot for somebody else to be a support character or to play another role.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I've never been tempted. I guess part of it is because her challenge hasn't been coming up.
That's true.
But so another character, super, super useful. Rebirth Raven, Red Lantern, Hal Jordan. Our teams basically have been Hawkgirl Prime and either Rebirth Raven or Red Lantern, Hal Jordan, plus the character we're trying to highlight. If that doesn't tell you how good these characters are, you can pretty much use them as support for any team.
Yeah.
It costs you... like, there's practically no direct synergy. Like, mm-hmm. they don't make specific combinations like the way Red Sun does, right? Like, there's a specific synergy with them.
They're among, like, the most flexible of all the supporting characters.
Are there better teams? Sure. But if you only had... the characters that you like, plus Hawkgirl, plus Rebirth Raven, and Red Lantern, Hal Jordan, I think that would be a good enough roster to really handle pretty much any situation. Obviously, we're talking with whatever gear slots, but I think there's probably going to be a case for saying that there's probably like a handful of 15 gears at the most mm-hmm. that I think would be necessary that you could make a great team out of.
Yeah.
There's so few characters... or so few other characters that can slot in that easily on pretty much any team and make them good. Maybe not the best, but really good. The other thing I think is criminally underrated are Flashpoint Deathstroke and Flashpoint Aquaman. Everybody, every tier list that I've actually looked at puts Flashpoint Batman really high. Yeah. And they put both Deathstroke and Aquaman low. And I will, what's this, the word?
Pause it.
I was thinking pause it. It felt like it was going to be wrong. I will pause it. This to you.
You're like proposing or suggesting.
I will suggest this to you, that Flashpoint Deathstroke is better than Flashpoint Batman on a Flashpoint team. Because Flashpoint Batman gets the benefit of his what does he call them? Like Dark Blows or whatever, the one that where his critical damage is boosted.
Oh yeah.
So he has that, but once he's on the team, they all have that. But Flashpoint Deathstroke has the extra benefit of extra hits on his combo ender and extra damage on special. Blows? I can't remember.
Whatever.
Yeah, I can't remember. What I remember is it's that he does double the crit damage of what he should be doing. So he's actually better because his specials do more damage. His basic, his tap combo does more damage. It's got extra hits. It generates more power. And so on a Deathstroke team, or on a Flashpoint team with Flashpoint Batman, I mean, Flashpoint team is really, there's only the three Flashpoint characters, right?
Yeah.
Flashpoint Deathstroke is the most powerful of the three. And Flashpoint Batman's special two is crippled. It does really tiny amount of damage. Not enough compared to what his damage is. Aquaman's special one has bleed damage that we can really leverage and do so many interesting things with it. But Flashpoint Deathstroke is really the star of that team. Now, he would be no good without Batman. If you take away Batman, if you do not use him optimally and you have him on a team without Batman, he's all right. He's not great. He's just all right. But this is what I mean, that they're, I think people consider it differently. And if you look at the ideal situation, you come up with different answers.
So interesting. Anyways, I guess let us know in the comments how you would feel about a tier list, if you think it would make sense, and if that format that we've sort of described is something that'd be appealing to you. And then maybe we'll get around to it one day.
Or maybe not.
Yeah. No promises, but let us know how you feel about it. At least then we'll know we're letting people down by not making it instead of assuming that nobody wants to watch it.
Yeah.
But I think that's probably a good place to end it for the week.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So to finish up, we'd like to give a huge thank you to our lovely supporters on Patreon. That's Michael DeVries, Irvin Ruiz, and Hoshi127 on the credited level. Thanks so much for your support. And thanks so much to all of you for watching or listening, because, you know, podcast.
Yeah.
We'll see you next time.
Komoda.